Should they score?
Score!
We have turned
the clock back. Score!
This week in the NHL.
I felt like I did all the right things to prepare for this game.
We got to be focused all 60 minutes.
This week in the NHL.
The most arrogant team he's ever played against.
Do you think that's more of a personnel issue or more of a
he's dominating like the Jets wanted him to do.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve. Now Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Richard Pollock on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things hockey. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening, TSN1290.ca. Good evening, universe, and welcome to an abbreviated 60-minute version of NHL This Week. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. 60 minutes of hockey talk for you this Thursday as we get you set for that barn burner of an NFL Thursday nighter, the Rams and the Buccaneers, a game you can hear live, of course, right after us on this fine radio station. Gentlemen, good evening. How are you both?
Well, good, Drew. I mean, there's nothing to talk about, so hopefully we'll be able to fill the hour.
Yeah, exactly right. Nothing, no news whatsoever in Winnipeg Jets land, so why don't we get started right with that. We'll start off today with the news, the story from Tim Campbell earlier this week that combined, Andrew Ladd, Dustin Byfuglien, Jacob Trouba, their contract asks total $152 million. Both Ladd and Byfuglien, of course, unrestricted free agents at the end of the season. Jacob Trouba, an RFA, without arbitration eligibility. And to me, gentlemen, and we'll talk about really this entire concept, to me, what's newsworthy here isn't so much the asks, because, you know, if you're the agent for all these guys, why wouldn't you ask for the moon? You'd be derelict in your duty if you didn't. But what's newsworthy to me here is that this got leaked, and that somebody is obviously, I don't know who, Tim's doing a great job, of course, reporting the news that he's hearing. That somebody here is obviously trying to either curry favor with the general public or to prepare people and maybe have people chatting that these players are greedy, and I'm not sure which way it is.
Well, those aren't mutually exclusive.
They certainly are not mutually exclusive. But to me, that is the more interesting story, is that which side, the agents or management?
So hold on. I just want to make sure I got it from your perspective. You're telling me you think all the agents talked to each other and said, okay, we're going to give it information to a source that's going to get out and it's going to be reported? Or one source, mm-hmm, who deals with all three agents is going to leak it? I don't know which one it was. I know the odds are probably a lot more on the latter than the former.
I would agree with you. I'm painting a picture of all the possibilities. Well, if I was a betting man, I think I would echo.
This isn't a Monet, Drew.
If I was a betting man, I think I would echo your wager and say that probably the source is the individual who would be privy to all this information, as opposed to having multiple pieces have to come together to release this information.
Yeah, but hold on a second here, because you're right in the sense that this information that has been revealed about how many years and how much money that Andrew Ladd, Dustin Byfuglien, and Jacob Trouba are looking for is not new, because Richie wrote two articles, mm-hmm, several months ago now in regards to Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien and how much they would be looking for, and Richie was bang on as usual. So you shouldn't be surprised that both Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien are looking for longer-term contracts, and they're looking for in the neighborhood of $7 million. So you're right, Drew. Nothing about that is new, right? What's interesting here is, yeah, why the timing, right? Why is this stuff coming out now? And I think this stuff is coming up now because the Jets are at a breaking point right now in the season. If they don't turn this around quickly, they're going to be out of the playoffs in early January or mid-January. That's if they don't go on a significant streak here and at, mm-hmm, least win three or four games in a row. They can't keep playing 500 hockey. I mean, the Colorado Avalanche have now passed the Jets. They're last place in the division. The Jets, mm-hmm, need to start getting wins. So they have now about 2.5 months before the trade deadline, right? Roughly, sure, 2.5 months.
Yeah. Yeah. February 29th.
And if they don't move one of these players and they're not signed, of course, they risk losing these players for nothing. Talking about Ladd and Byfuglien, not Jacob Trouba.
Right.
We already know Jacob Trouba is not going to be signed to a contract extension before the season's over. The Jets have already announced that. Jacob Trouba's camp has acknowledged that they're not going to talk contract extension until the season's over.
Nor is there a reason to necessarily worry about that contract.
Right. Now, as far as Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien goes, we've heard varying degrees of talks have been going on, more so with Andrew Ladd than Dustin Byfuglien. But, Richie, when you talk about, you know, Dustin Byfuglien and his status versus Andrew Ladd and his status, really there's complete uncertainty right now as far as are these players going to re-sign. I think we'd all agree that you could make an argument that the way Dustin Byfuglien has played this season especially and last year, that he should be signed to a 4 or 5 year contract extension, maybe not a 6 or 7 year contract extension like he's looking for. Andrew Ladd, he struggled, but you could still say that he's the captain, he's been the leader of this team both emotionally and offensively, especially last year, setting a career mark for points. But right now, there's so much uncertainty that I think there is a lot of pressure, not public pressure. I think there's internal pressure on the Jets right now to make something happen, because as we've talked about, the further and further the season goes, and as long as the Jets are sticking around close to a playoff spot, it's worse for the Jets and is better for the player. Because, in a sense, you'd want to know that a player is signed already if you're going to still be on a playoff run, or going on a playoff run. If you're sitting in this situation in early February, and Kevin Cheveldayoff obviously is working on this situation right now. He's either going to sign one or both of these players, or he's going to trade both of these players, or keep one or both of these players. There are a lot of different scenarios that can happen here. We didn't think we would be sitting here in early December talking about this, mid-December. Talking about this, right? We thought Andrew Ladd would be signed and maybe even Dustin Byfuglien would be signed as well. And now here we are, mid-December, the Jets are on a terrible losing streak and neither player is signed and we have no idea what's going to happen. So I think the timing should not surprise a lot of people. Maybe the source, Drew, should surprise a lot of people. And I know there have been, you know, the conspiracy theorists are out saying that, you know, this information is coming from one side or the other. I don't buy that. But I think that the timing shouldn't surprise anybody, because you have 2 months left to decide. Are you going to sign these guys, or are you going to trade?
What have you been doing? This is no news. What's the news here? I realize that the number and the specific asks is news. Okay, it's news that those are the asks. But if you thought about it, what is new here? Byfuglien asking for the numbers that are discussed? Yeah. Pretty expected, pretty reasonable market asks.
$7 million.
Same thing. Yeah,
$7 million.
Okay, so same thing. Trouba's ask is, I'm not going to say irrelevant, because it is relevant to the teams, the scale of the cap, and of course, if you pay Byfuglien, then you have Myers and the amount of money on the right side, blah, blah, blah. But he is on an expiring RFA contract before even getting arbitration eligibility. So let me just explain that a little more. Lots of people may not know. A player of Trouba's age, he comes into the league and he has 3 years on his entry-level deal. So year one, year two, year three. He is in the middle of year three right now. When that year three expires, on July 1st, he becomes a restricted free agent, meaning that only his team, only the Jets can sign him unless you tender him an offer sheet, in which the Jets have 7 days to match that offer sheet. To match an offer sheet, you have to have the draft picks necessary to make that. Plus, you have to be willing to give up the picks, and the picks are scaled compensation-wise based on how much you're paying Jacob Trouba. So unless you grossly overpay Jacob Trouba, the Jets will match that contract. And even if you grossly overpay Jacob Trouba, the Jets may still match that contract and not opt for the draft picks. Jacob Trouba, though, aside from the threat of an offer sheet, and the Jets signing him, has no ability to get a contract. I mean, he cannot take the team to arbitration.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever he asks for, he can ask for whatever number it is. And if he wants to base it on Drew Doughty, that's fine, or whatever other players. I mean, I don't think he's in that class, nor will he be. And I like Jacob Trouba. You guys know that.
How many players are in the Drew Doughty class?
Right, exactly. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. He can ask for whatever he wants. And the total number, is just that a number. You want to go to any team you want to pick out the highest paid players and ask what their contracts are worth and put it to $150, $200, $300 million. And that's not, like, we're dealing with top-end National Hockey League players in a cap in a world where you have to spend a certain amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the way the price of doing business.
And the only thing new in Tim Campbell's article, by the way, Drew, and obviously this is no disrespect to Tim, because he's mm-hmm. a great hockey reporter, and he has been a great hockey reporter dating back to the Jets 1.0. But mm-hmm. as far as I'm concerned, the only thing that's really new is that maybe Dustin Byfuglien was asking for 7-8 years, which we already knew was a possibility, and we already knew that the Jets would prefer probably to sign him to closer to 4, 5, 6 years. So that's the only thing really new here. The numbers shouldn't surprise anybody, and as I mentioned before, Richie, you mentioned this, and for Tim and you know, his article, obviously.
Tim's reporting. That's his
right,
job.
He's reporting.
But I am telling you my analysis of what it is that, you know, that the numbers and the stuff that he's reporting. And, I mean, take a look at it, and I'm not sure why people are so up in arms about it, if they are.
I don't sense that that people are necessarily. Going back to the what ramifications? So
I think it's the number, Drew. Sorry to cut you off.
Well, that's what I'm.
Well, that's the headline. The headline writer is responsible for putting $152 million in bold writing. And you sure, fine, whatever.
NHL players make a lot of money.
Yeah, exactly. News at 11. What ramifications? I believe this came from Jets management. You believe this came from Jets management. I'm not sure what you believe, Ezzy, but regardless. Mm-hmm. What ramifications do you think this will have, if any, on the negotiations if the agents feel that the team is playing politics with the negotiations?
Money talks, Drew.
So none?
None. I don't think it has any. It's a game. It's money talks. If you're gonna pay up, if you're going to meet the demands, that's fine. Water under the bridge.
Because, Richie, the GM has a number, right? And the agent has a number.
Yeah, I think it came from the team side because it doesn't make sense why agents would all work together on that. I just don't see that happening.
Okay,
but I just don't think it has.
I don't think there's group collusion amongst the NHL agents, because I think they all represent different clients, right? So obviously, for salaries to increase, and for example, Dustin Byfuglien, Brent Seabrook, not the same exact type of defenseman, Drew, because Brent Seabrook is clearly not as physical as Dustin Byfuglien. Mm-hmm. They're just different players, but if you want to compare their offensive totals for defensemen, even though Dustin Byfuglien's numbers are better than Seabrook, and obviously Seabrook has a couple more Stanley Cups, but you could, if you're Dustin Byfuglien's agent, you were probably liking the Brent Seabrook contract for the amount of money he got on an annual basis.
Same
right?
If you're Andrew Ladd's agent, you're liking the Ryan Kessler contract.
You're pending UFA. You're gonna have, you have all the leverage. That's what Jacob Trouba doesn't have all the leverage. That's how the NHL works. Mm-hmm. The team has a lot more leverage early on in the player's career, and they lose it as it goes on. That was a big bargaining chip in the 04 lockout, in the 05 lockout there. Sure. So that's what happens. So,
yeah, that was the trade-off for the salary cap.
That's right.
So why? What's the vested interest? Why is it in the Jets' interest to leak this information if they did?
Well, a couple of reasons. I mean, the first would be if the public, the media, the fans deem the contract asked to be far in excess of the value of the players, they're going to be far more understanding of a move or a not signing the player.
So you think it's maybe seeding the ground, seeding the soil for a future move?
I think that has to be a factor for sure. For sure it does. And another reason maybe, you know, putting it out there, maybe it's a distraction. Maybe the player wants to eliminate the distraction and he sees and he doesn't feel, maybe he's asking for more than the other players think, you know, he's worth, although I usually just think the players say get as much as you can, mm-hmm. and maybe that pressures them into a deal or make a decision. Or they think that the agents are bluffing on their asks and pressuring the agent through different means. I don't know, Drew, but I really don't think all that stuff has much of an effect. Money talks. Like, the numbers are going to talk.
Let's head to break. We'll keep you abreast of all the latest news when it comes to this. When we come back, Adam Lowry, he's now on the Manitoba Moose. We'll talk about it. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Hey. Welcome back to NHL This Week. I neglected to mention that the opening segment was brought to you by Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Adam Lowry, gentlemen, now a member of the Manitoba Moose, having played his first game for the Moose last night in a 5-1 offensive explosion by the Moose. And Lowry, wearing number 47, played for the Moose for the first time in a couple of seasons, or I guess the first time in the AHL for a couple of seasons. When that news release came out, when that news came over the wire a couple days ago, how surprised were you that the Winnipeg Jets sent Adam Lowry down to the Manitoba Moose.
That's yesterday, right?
Yes, I guess it would have been yesterday morning.
True, long days, eh?
The days blend together. You know, I don't even know when I start or when I stop.
Hey, we'll give you a break. You have a newborn, so.
Thank you. Yes, they just blend one into the other.
How long are they a newborn for? Until they're one or like 6 months? Or when do they cease to be a newborn?
I think when you no longer count how old they are in weeks, when you count it in months, I think that's
probably like 3 or 4 months.
Yeah,
maybe.
About that. And you know, maybe by the 3 or 4 month mark, we'll get that present you've been promising us, Ezzy.
Well, I saw Aaron on Monday.
Yes.
Aaron saw Uncle Ezzy, and
it's true.
It was really nice to see Aaron at actually Bernstein's Deli.
It's true. Bernstein, which is convenient because this segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal
Curve. Is that choreographed?
That wasn't. It's just good timing. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years.
So obviously, sorry, Rich, just one more thing on
an hour
Aaron
here. You're going to better go quick.
Bernstein's Deli, and Aaron's obviously too young to eat an Illegal Curve sandwich, so Drew was actually eating two Illegal Curve sandwiches to make up for the one that Aaron wasn't eating. Anyways, continue, Rich.
The Adam Lowry thing surprised me in that, I mean, he struggled, obviously. There's no question about it. He struggled playing center with Drew Stafford, a guy, you know, a scoring player, and he's been shifted to the wing, kind of, you know, thrown onto the fourth line and a little bit on the third line. And I'm just surprised because the Jets really don't have anything down on the farm to take his spot. So we talked about that. So this is that was a surprising move to me.
Joel Armia, Matt Hallestrek getting called up by the Jets today.
Yeah, and then you're even getting less physical now. So we talked about the physicality last year. They become a less physical team. Now you become even less physical again. Maybe it's take the pressure off. The one goal there, I guess. I'm just, and maybe it's to restore his confidence. I mean, he's been in the league for a while, a year and a half now. So I'm surprised after that the length of time they're putting him back down. It's not like it hasn't happened before, but. Yeah, it's overall, it's a surprising move to me. I don't know, he's not a sniper. I don't think he's going to go down to the AHL and just tear it up offensively. That's not his game.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't his game before he got called up. You know, he had success in that respect, but he's never going to have a ton of production offensively as far as I can tell. So a little bit surprising, and I mean, you look at the fourth line today in practice, And what is it? They're doing with the line rushes that they had. It was Hallestrek / Armia, Kopp, and Peluso. So, I mean, again, and then the third line stays the same, and that line is just kind of doesn't have any chemistry as far as I can tell. So you're putting a ton of pressure on your first two lines again, and they have games where they struggle. Okay, hey, lots of top lines struggle, you know, game after game, right? That's just what happens. There's the ebbs and flows of the season. You know, obviously the top line struggle less. But there's going to be those times when you never have, or very rarely have, not never, when you very rarely have any production from your depth lines. It puts so much pressure on the top two lines, and it puts a lot of pressure on the defense to create offense, which concerns you because sometimes that offense from the defense comes at the expense of playing good defensive hockey.
Yeah, you're right, Richie, and that has been one of the major problems for this Jets team this year, in addition to the lack of defensive structure and trouble in the own zone. For the Winnipeg Jets, it's been the lack of production from the secondary scorers. And look, you guys know I'm a big Adam Lowry fan. He's struggled this year. Rich mentioned he only has one goal this year. It was last week against Columbus at home, and he's only got 7 points, and he's struggled. He's taken some penalties that have hurt the Winnipeg Jets, but I think that this is a short-term move, and I think it's to get Adam Lowry back on the right track and to get him re-motivated. I think that Adam Lowry is obviously only 22 years old and has an extremely bright future ahead of him. But, you know, Rich mentions the third line. Drew Stafford moving to the second line with Matthew Perreault and Mark Scheifele, who have been there the entire year.
Mm-hmm.
And then Nikolaj Ehlers coming down. Nikolaj Ehlers, I don't think it's a coincidence that Nikolaj Ehlers has struggled on that third line. And, you know, Chris Thorburn has done yeoman's work on the third line there with Alexander Burmistrov, but they haven't had a consistently productive third line. I'm talking about offensively. Because I think Adam Lowry is extremely good defensively, and you know he's worked on faceoffs, and as Rich mentioned, he's a huge part of the physical component of this team because the Jets have lost a little bit of that physical edge that they had last year. Certainly, I would say up front, because the defense, of course, hasn't changed much. The change has been mainly to the depth forwards, mm-hmm. right? So it's a move to me that will be short-term. And, you know, I think it will benefit Adam Lowry. Last night he played on a line with Joel Armia on the second line Joel Armia, of course, was recently called up. Kozmichuk was the other guy that was on Adam Lowry's line. Dave Nuke was at the game last night and said Adam Lowry played pretty well. Obviously, the Moose had a big 5-1 win. So this is something that I see Paul Maurice and the coaching staff doing to kind of re-energize Adam Lowry because...
Well, let me interrupt you right there, Ezzy. Is it re-energizing Adam Lowry, or is this a punishment for him taking the penalty against the St. Louis
Blues?
That's
part of it. That's part of it. I don't think it's just that one penalty. I don't think you send a guy down to the
really?
AHL for
you
one penalty.
You think that's why?
I think it might have. I think it has something to do with it.
Well, I'd be surprised if that was the reason.
Well, then why after the St. Louis game was that the straw that broke the back that he had to be sent down? Did you notice any difference in his play between that game or any of the other 2 weeks previous worth of games?
Well, Drew, you've seen Adam Lowry demoted to the fourth line already.
Sure.
He hasn't been a healthy scratch, but you've seen him demoted. So I think it started with that. And I think Adam Lowry has struggled in his overall game. I mean, Adam Lowry at times last year was a dominant physical forward. And I mean, he scored 11 goals, sure. He's not Eric Lindros, but sometimes he played like Eric Lindros. He's got the size.
Yeah,
he
don't,
could
be,
go,
don't be
well, no,
Lindros.
I mean the physical aspect of his game. I mean, he can work the puck down low. He can make big hits. He can be a physically intimidating player for a guy who last year was 21 years old, right? I don't think we've seen that out of him. To me, the goals aren't as concerning. I mean, Nikolai Ehlers isn't scoring right now. There's a lot of players that aren't scoring for the Winnipeg Jets. Alexander Burmistrov's not scoring.
Right.
So I don't think you can just look at that one goal for Adam Lowry and pick on him and say that, you know, they sent him down for that reason or because he took that bad penalty against St. Louis, which resulted in a goal. I think it was an accumulation of things. I think the coaches have seen that he hasn't been playing his best hockey. They're going to send him down to the AHL, which is down the hall this year. And I think they're going to call him back up in 2 or 3 weeks. I don't think this is a permanent demotion by any means.
No, I don't think it's a permanent demotion either. I mean, frankly, they don't have anyone else to fill that spot. So, I mean, and they also have, I mean, they still have high hopes for him for his future. But
well, this is an opportunity for a Joel Armia. I mean, the Joel Armia.
As if Joel Armia was anything, was going to be anything on this team, he was sitting in the press box for 3 weeks. If they had high hopes for Joel Armia, and if they thought he was going to materialize...
If they had high hopes for Joel Armia, why did they trade for him?
Honestly?
If they didn't.
Well, if he was going to crack this lineup, he had 3 weeks worth of opportunities to crack the lineup where he sat in the press box game in, game out. They could have put him in the lineup.
Well, that's not his fault.
No, it's not his fault. I mean...
I still think they want him to be a member of this team.
How many minutes is Joel Armia going to play tomorrow? How many minutes do you think that on Friday? How many minutes, just tomorrow? How many minutes do you think that fourth lineup...
Well, we don't know if he's going in the lineup.
Fine.
But if he is in the lineup...
Or Halaschuk. It doesn't matter. How many minutes is Kopp, Peluso, and Armia or Halaschuk going to play against the New York Rangers?
Well, that's a question for Paul Maurice. I can't answer that. I mean, the best guess would be probably in the neighborhood of 6 to 10 minutes. They're not going to play 15 or 20 minutes.
Right.
But I don't see why that furthers your point that they don't have high hopes for him. I mean, they traded for him, and he's been given an opportunity. If you go back to listen to what I just said,
mm-hmm.
I said they're going to give him an opportunity. I didn't say he was going to be Patrick Kane.
No, of course not.
He has an opportunity right now to make a lasting impact on this team and make his mark in the NHL. He's got one game of NHL experience. That's all I said.
I agree.
Lowry's demotion gives other players an opportunity. I'm not saying that Matt Halaschuk is going to score 30 goals from here to the end of the season. I'm just saying it's an opportunity for other players that were down in the AHL to make an impact and stick with the team.
Sure. And you're right. It is an opportunity for those guys because they can't healthy scratch everybody always. I just think that if Armia was going to make a significant impact on this team...
He hasn't played yet.
I know he hasn't played yet. They had him up in the press box.
Can't make an impact in the press box.
I agree. And so if they thought that he could make an impact, they would have put him in the lineup. It's not like everything's been hunky-dory with this team, and there's no need to change the roster. I have trouble believing that now that Adam Lowry's down to the AHL, all of a sudden this is, you know, Joel Armia is going to really capitalize on this fantastic opportunity.
I didn't say he was going to capitalize.
I'm not saying he did.
I said he will be given the opportunity to capitalize.
Sure, you're right.
And
he will be given the opportunity.
And he is a skilled player, and he's been one of the top Moose scorers in the AHL. And he's got that skill set. He's more of an offensive-minded player, but he has a bit of a physical element to his game. Pete Siamandis did a great write-up for our website on illegalcurve.com about Joel Armia. Still young at 22 years old. That's all I'm saying. He's going to be given an opportunity, and I think that's why they included him in the trade, because they saw the potential. And again, Drew, I'm not saying that he's, you know, no. He's Zach Parise or he's, you know, Jonathan Toews. I'm just saying that he has the opportunity now with the Lowry demotion.
He certainly does have the opportunity.
I like when you guys have emotion and go at it like that. That's good. I want to see more of that. I'm just going to leave before we go to break here. I'm just going to say, I think the fans go crazy tomorrow if it's Halaschuk and not Armia, just because they want to see something different.
Go crazy with negativity.
I would expect it to be Armia, Drew, based on the fact that he was with the Jets and didn't play and he couldn't get into the line.
I don't think it's anything to lose sleep over either way, but I think that the fans will want to see something different. They don't want to see Halaschuk. Been year after year, these kind of guys, and Lowry goes down, and this is a guy you're calling up. Like, this is the reinforcement. Well, I think what that sends to the fans, regardless of your intention, that the message it sends to the fans is not a good one.
What is the message to say to Joel Armia?
And they're clearly concerned with what the fans are, you know, based on they're making a lot of moves right now. I think that part of that report is based on the fans, so I think this will be a move that they'd want to at least show there's some youth and a guy who's part of a trade that they made.
We will see. We'll find out tomorrow night who is in the Winnipeg Jets lineup as they take on the New York Rangers, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the new defense pairings that the Jets unveiled on Tuesday night against the Blues. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Uh-huh. 25 minutes before the top of the hour. You're listening to NHL This Week. This segment brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100. On Tuesday, against the Blues, the Winnipeg Jets unveiled some new defensive pairings. Enstrom and Myers stayed the same, but the big change happened with Jacob Trouba and Dustin Byfuglien being made a pair for the entirety of the game. They played a free-flowing defensive style in that one wasn't always on the left side and one wasn't always on the right side, but depending on the play and the action that was taking place, they would sort of switch sides and cover up for one another. First things first, how did you think Trouba and Byfuglien played together as a defensive pairing against the Blues on Tuesday night?
I thought it was all right. I mean, I thought they played pretty well for the most part. You know, the first goal there that they were on the ice was a turnover, but aside from that, pretty solid. You know, clearly both players can skate and move the puck. I have a huge issue with the way the pairing played. I just don't know. A couple things on this. Why this wasn't tried way earlier in the season, and I think, frankly, in the preseason.
Sure.
Because the roster hasn't changed. So if you're going to try right side guys on the left side, which is not really a surprise, the question then is, why didn't you let the right side guys who clearly aren't used to it practice at that spot? So I found it also peculiar a little bit that, you know, Dustin Byfuglien's comments about playing with Trouba, he wasn't negative about it, but he wasn't. Usually the players give your cliche kind of positive comment about who they're playing with, and he kind of just said, you know, I played with everybody already at this point. So it was kind of an interesting comment, I thought. Maybe I'm reading into it too much. But overall, I think, I got to tell you, I don't think Mark Stewart and Ben Sherratt can play together. I don't think that's sustainable.
Well,
I think that's a disaster.
Go expand on that.
Well, I just don't think they're not good enough. I mean, you want me to simplify, they're not good enough. And, you know, the other part is that Ben Sherratt playing on that off wing is also something that needs to be spoken about, right? I mean, you know, he had some trouble there a bit, and it's going to be an adjustment. So you have two guys adjusting at the same time in the middle of an intense playoff chase, which basically every game in this NHL now is an intense playoff chase. And they played against a third and fourth line every shift of that game, which they have to, and that's at home. And they played against the first and second line, I believe, five times, all post-icing or long offensive shifts that ended up in a change in the offensive zone. So the Jets Charlie Hedy was protecting them as he should. That protection's not going to be out there on the road when sometimes you get bad matchups and the last change is there. So I'm not so sure that's going to be something that's sustainable. So I think I see what they're doing. I just think it's probably it's oddly timed. And it may leave them very vulnerable on that third pair.
Yeah, and clearly Tyler Myers and Tobias Enstrom, I mean, they have been a solid pairing for this team since Tyler Myers came over from Buffalo. And I agree with Rich. I thought Bufflin and Trouba were really good together, and I thought Trouba was engaged physically. Mm-hmm. He was rushing the puck up a little bit more. He was driving to mm-hmm. the net a little bit more. We've kind of seen less of that this year than we saw last year. I think we've seen that more in the last 10 games than maybe we saw in the first 20 games.
Yeah, Bufflin will create room for him.
And Buff creates room for himself and other players. You're right, Richie, but I don't think that you can... I know Mark Stewart was taking a lot of criticism for the way he played against the St. Louis Blues. I think it goes back to what Richie said. You have two guys that are left shots playing the opposite side. You have two players playing mm-hmm. the opposite side. One that's a left-shooting defenseman in Ben Sherratt, and then you have Jacob Trouba, of course. But, you know, we saw Jacob Trouba and Tyler Myers paired up earlier in the season. That didn't stick for very long. Mm-hmm. I think that was two or three games, and then they went back to putting Mark Stewart with Jacob Trouba. But I think this goes back to some of the deficiencies amongst the NHL, the Jets defensemen, and that's that they're stronger on the right side than the left side. And we've talked about that throughout the entirety of the season, and that's not anything that has changed. And, you know, the Jets, I think, have played better defensively over the last couple of weeks. You know, going back to the game against the Minnesota Wild, I thought maybe that was their best game that they played as a group defensively. Mm-hmm. If you remember, that was on Black Friday.
Sure.
And, you know, they've struggled a little bit here over the last little bit. And, you know, against the St. Louis Blues, I mean, a couple of power play goals. I mean, I didn't think that either of those two goals on the power play were necessarily the result of the new defense pairings, right?
Yeah,
obviously, there were two defense pairings. I thought they were, I mean, Alex Steen's goal was a, you know, kind of a C&I point shot. It was a nice shot. And then, obviously, Vladimir Tarasenko's goal, it was a nice goal. And it was an odd man rush, and there was some blown coverage there. And I don't think you can necessarily blame the defense on that one. So I think, you know, they'll probably stick with this one for a little bit. I don't know if they necessarily stick with it moving forward, because I think the Jets have had their most success when Mark Stewart and Jacob Trouba are together, and when Ben Sherratt and Dustin Bufflin are together. They're obviously not going to move that top pair with Myers and Enstrom. And then again, maybe you see an Adam Partey or Paul Postma go back into the lineup to maybe give a little bit more of a physical edge on that bottom pair. That's what I see happening, at least in the short term.
My question is, or my point would be, if you're going to be playing loading up on the top four, okay, yeah. I can totally see the rationale.
You can play those guys 50 of your 60 minutes.
That's the thing. It's like, why is Mark Stewart playing 50 and 40 of even strength and Jacob Trouba's playing 14-50?
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that.
It is bizarre. I mean, you would have thought, and you know, I think most people that have said that have been sort of advocating for this loading up of the top four would say because they can those guys can handle, you know, 5/6 of all the ice time in the course of the game. They can handle 50 of your 60 minutes. You know, these guys are used to playing. They have no problem playing 24-25 minutes a game. And then, yes, exactly, against St. Louis, when you don't have, sure, you have last change and you can get the matchups you want, but you know, why are you still relying so much on Stewart and Sherratt?
The thing for me. Like, I can see the rationale. Again, it should have been done earlier as far as I'm concerned, at least testing it out. But I can see the rationale. I don't think that third pairing is going to be able to defend well enough. But if you play those guys in the top a lot more minutes, then you have less time to be worried about it. I'd be more concerned about it on the road. But you could also do guys, well, like the Blackhawks do, for example. That's throw out their 5-6 guys very often with one of the top four guys. So they get some ice time.
Sure.
But they're insulated.
Well, you give it which works because you give your top four guys even more minutes. The other guys are insulated,
or
like you said.
Or you choose to put them out there with better forwards. I mean, there's ways to do it. I just the way that they employ the lines and
they sort of just did the status quo.
It was odd. Yeah, it was odd because they played a lot. They played a lot against the third and fourth line, and St. Louis does play their third and fourth line a lot. And I thought their probably worst period was probably the first that bottom pairing. But overall, they need to be using the defensemen differently if they're going to load up like that.
And my major criticism of the D pairings this year would be that you've seen different D pairings, but you haven't seen them for very long. And I don't think you can base how good a D pairing is looking on one game.
I agree, Izzy.
So if you're going to try Mark Stewart and Ben Sherratt, and you're going to have Ben Sherratt play on the opposite side, you got to stick with that.
Mm-hmm. Or you have to go to use one of your depth defensemen and Partey or Postma and you know, do a traditional left-right pairing for your bottom defensive
pairing. Drew, if you want to play Trouba with Buff, you got to stick with that for at least, I don't know, 10 games? You can't just put them out there for one or two games.
What's the point of starting it for exactly? What's the point of having it, you know, seeing how they perform for a game or two games and then pulling the plug on it? Because
that was my point about playing in the preseason, about four or five or six games, and then you come into the regular season, you play two or three or four, that's 10, and then you're okay.
Another thing that hasn't been discussed, and I'm a big fan of Adam Pardy, I think this year we've seen a glaring lack of depth on defense. You talk about the forwards. I mean, Josh Morrissey's not knocking at the door right now. He's still developing in the AHL, and aside from Adam Pardy,
depth. I mean, it's the same defense they had last year.
They're healthy, and you know they've been very reticent to put in Paul Postma. I think Adam Pardy has played what 10 games this year, and I think
the same D as the playoffs. It's just the forwards aren't as good.
Yeah, the D is exactly the same, but I think the team's commitment to defense as a mentality is lacking. I mean, but the defense is the same as last year.
I mean, don't get me wrong.
It's not good enough on the left side. I agree with you.
Well, I'm just saying it's been musical chairs on defense, and they've been reticent to call anybody up from the AHL or really put anybody else
into
the lineup.
You're right that there's nobody knocking on the door. That's fair. That's absolutely fair. And maybe as your point there is, why not have just stick with the pairings in the playoffs? But
like, if you don't like what you see on the third pair, call up a Brendan Kitchen.
Sure.
Call up a Julian Melchiori.
Yeah, no, that doesn't make a difference, though. I mean, if those guys can make the difference, they would put him up there.
There's nobody. The only guy.
They haven't had the chance yet in the NHL level.
Well, but these guys.
But
know.
I mean,
Melchiori's played, what, 5 games?
Yeah, I mean, he's not going to make the difference. No.
Well, what do you mean by difference?
Like, he's not going to make a difference over who's there right now.
He's not going to solve your.
Then you have to make a trade.
For a defense?
Well,
you got to address
like what
the forwards.
You got to either. There's two ways to address it. You call someone up or you make a trade. I mean, how many times can you move around the defenseman and put this guy on the left side or that guy on the right side and expect different results?
You know, it's just also going to be a function that the team's not going to be is not good enough this year. And, these guys know if their team is good enough or not. The management isn't going, if you want to acquire an asset to solve your problem with your defense, what you're saying is it's going to cost you something. And maybe the management is sitting back and saying, do we want to spend that asset when we don't think we're good enough as currently constructed this year?
I think the defense is good enough as currently constructed to make the playoffs. I think that they have been mismanaged and they haven't found fluid D pairings. And I think when you move around guys so much from second pair to the third pair on the wrong side and you don't stick with it, I don't think that shows a lot of confidence in your pairings in general. And I think that's been the issue because, as you mentioned,
defense is totally good enough to make the playoffs.
Absolutely,
a lot of good players in this
right?
defense.
So yeah. I agree with you necessarily. You bring in Brendan Kitchen. I'm not saying that necessarily they go on a crazy run here, but I think you have to stick with some of these pairings if that's what you see as the best pairings with the defensemen you have. And I think we've seen too much that they've gone with pairings and they've switched them 3 games later.
Well, I think they tried to go with the regular defense, quote-unquote, the defense of last year for the first 25 games this year with Trouba and Stewart and Myers and Enstrom and Bufflin and Sherratt, and it hasn't been good enough. Now, is that on the D pairings solely? No, it's on the forward group and the D pairings, and I think your problem, to your point, Richie, that your forwards aren't good enough to help support your defense like they were last year.
Well, if you want to simplify, the defense is the same.
Yeah.
The forwards are different, and the goaltending was the same. Now, that's changed, obviously. But if you want to look at it simply, well, forwards are different. The results aren't as good. There you go.
Yeah, because your goaltending, I mean, Pavlik obviously is injured, but you're pretty much getting the same sort of average goaltending you got last year.
They got above average goaltending last year.
They got above average goaltending for the last 20 games of last year.
Well, I just it was very good just to, what, until
sure.
what,
yeah, until
January?
Until the All-Star break he was
good. They had some spurts of real good play. But I just think that's a big difference here. And I mean, we can break down the defense, it's certainly not perfect. Mm-hmm. But to me, the Jets got bigger fish to fry.
In their top 9, top 12.
Yes.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll preview tomorrow evening's Rangers-Jets game. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. One final segment this Thursday evening with NHL This Week. Programming note for Saturday in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's at the completely random time of 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So be sure, if you're looking for us, as I'm sure you are, 2 o'clock this on Saturday afternoon, 2 to 5, your mid-afternoon, Saturday afternoon fix with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Saturday at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Just announced at Rumors, coming in February 26th and 27th, our old friend, Dave Coulier, coming back to Rumors.
Uncle Joey.
Uncle Joey from Full House. He will be there on February 26th, 27th. Tickets now on sale. Was that your birthday, Richard?
Yes.
That we played hockey with him for?
It was.
Was it 21st birthday?
19th
birthday.
And Coulier is a good hockey player, too.
Pretty good.
He's a very good hockey player up from Michigan area. And he was in town playing at Rumors.
We went to a stand-up. We had a table there.
Yeah. And this is 12 years ago? Holy moly.
That wasn't 12 years ago.
Sure. If it was Richard's 19th birthday, it was.
Might have been longer than that, but we're not going to get into it.
It's been a long time. Anyways, Dave Coulier at Rumors Comedy Club. Also want to give a shout-out and thanks to our friends at Riverview Health Center Foundation. Their Psycho on Life coming up on June the 5th, 2016. And our friends at Keener Jerseys for us helping sponsor the Illegal Curve Hockey Show and NHL this week.
When Dave Coulier played with us, our buddy Neil took a long shift. Dave Coulier took issue with it.
Well,
didn't like it. Likes to play a lot. He's wearing
a Wings jersey, too.
That's right. Well, it was Neil's Wings jersey. We brought it because he used to have a Wings jersey on the show in Full House, I believe, in the basement.
He was in the basement, I think, yes. And Uncle Jesse was up in the attic, if I recall
extended
correctly.
Extended attic, yeah, of course,
Is Comet the dog still around?
I'm not sure if Comet the dog is still around. I picked him up at the airport, and he was just in town for 2 days. Yeah. And so we knew we had the ice time for your birthday. And so I picked him up at the airport, and the running joke, you know, knowing that he was coming in is, we'll invite him to play hockey with us, and, we'll have to gather up some gear and whatever. So I pick him up at the airport. He's only in town for 2 days. He's got this massive bag with him. I say to him, what's in the bag? You're only here for 2 days. Oh, I brought my gear just in case I get a hockey game that I'm able to play in. I say, there's a game tonight. You're in. And that was how we ended up playing with Dave Coulier.
And then he said, cut it out.
12 years ago, apparently, was when that occurred. Anyways, Jets and the Rangers tomorrow evening at MTS Center. Jets try and rebound after that disappointing loss on Tuesday night against the St. Louis Blues. The Rangers playing tonight in Minnesota. Antti Raanta in net for the Rangers tonight. Looks like it's going to be Henrik Lundqvist against the Jets tomorrow. You know, turmoil around this team, and turmoil, a little bit of turmoil at least with the Jets. And that can either lead to sort of motivation or can lead to sort of a distraction.
Yeah.
Which way do you think it's going to go tomorrow against the Rangers? And what do you see as your sort of keys to the game between the Jets and the Rangers tomorrow night?
Well, the Rangers' style of play is move that puck quickly. I mean, you look at the back end and they have guys who can move the puck. Stahl and McDonough and Yandel and Boyle and Dylan McArath's a Winnipeg boy. He's more of your physical type player, but
scored his first NHL goal.
Yeah, he did. So that'd be a nice homecoming for him. I don't know enough about Skage, the other defenseman. I don't know a lot about him, but I don't know anything about him actually. But the point is, they move and they play a certain style. It's a fast pace. They're not gonna be a team drop the gloves, throw the knuckles around. They're gonna play they play positionally sound. And if you watch them, they pressure the puck very well and all the time. So I think the key to the Jets game tomorrow is it's gonna be transition. Ensuring you don't get it caught out of position, and also making quick, safe decisions. If you make risky plays against this team, they'll turn it around on you and put it in the back of your net, and you don't have a lot of time. So, I mean, that somewhat plays into the Jets' mobile defense, especially with the, loading up on the top four guys.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that, we're not sure if Derek Stepan's going to play or not. That's certainly a huge difference up front for them, because if they can go at you with Brassard, Hayes, and Stepan, then the big problem there for the Jets is, hold on a second, are we going to be playing that third pairing, even at home, against one of those three centers, all of whom can create offense? But if Stepan doesn't play, then you've got JT Miller in the middle, changes things a lot. So a few things to watch out for, and we believe Lundqvist, because Raanta's playing tonight, I believe, so Lundqvist will likely play tomorrow.
Yeah, and Richie, this Rangers team has struggled a little bit here,
mm-hmm.
but after that President's Trophy winning season where they set that franchise record with 113 points last year, they're still at the top of the Eastern Conference, and they haven't missed a beat. To me, the New York Rangers are one of the finest mm-hmm. oiled machines, I would say, in the NHL right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I would put the Washington Capitals up there and a few other teams, but this Rangers team has gone to the Stanley Cup Finals, and they've gone to the Eastern Conference Final in consecutive years, and I think they're probably going to be close to going back there again this year. I don't know about getting to the Stanley Cup Finals, because this Washington Capitals are a pretty good team, and the Montreal Canadiens might have something to say about that, a few other teams. But, you know, Richie mentions up the middle, probably the biggest change between the New York Rangers this year as compared to last year. Kevin Hayes moved to the wing, but he's now back on the third line as the center. Rich mentioned JT Miller filling in on the second line for Derek Stepan, who's usually their second line center. Really skilled. And even though, you know, a few players have moved around, I actually think the Emerson Edom trade has benefited them, because he's in the bottom six. And even though he's kind of had varying degrees of success offensively, he's kind of added a different element to the team that Carl Hagelin offered. But this is still a very good team. And Rick Nash is having another great year on that top line with Brassard and Zuccarello. It's one of the top lines in hockey right now.
You have to stop that line. Myers and Enstrom, I think, draw that
line. Pardon me. You just said you're right. But, you know,
you're both saying to each other that you're both right all the time.
Yeah, and even though you don't have Dan Girardi in the lineup, you know, it's still a very good defense. And, you know, we talked about, you know, Boyle and Yandle earlier in the season, and they're obviously two offensive-minded guys, and Boyle's towards the end of his career. Mm-hmm. But Mark Stahl can replace Dan Girardi on the top pairing with McDonough. And then you mentioned McElrath, a Winnipegger, is playing with Keith Yandle on the second pair. You know, McElrath is a first rounder back from 2010. He's a good solid physical defenseman. And you mentioned
big,
Sky
6'5".
Yeah, Sky and Boyle on that third pairing. Still a very good group. Very good group. Pardon me. So the Jets are going to have to play a solid game, and they're going to have to match the Rangers' speed. I mean, the Jets have already beat the Rangers once this year.
Yeah,
the Jets went into MSG and beat the Rangers. They can beat this team, but they're going to need solid contributions from all four lines, and even if it's Armia and or Halaschuk going in on that fourth line, and the fourth line only plays 7 or 8 minutes, it's still going to have to be solid. And they have the benefit of last change here, obviously, but it should be an exciting game. And I would expect there to be a lot of goals in this game, and you maybe wouldn't expect that with Henrik Lundqvist in net, but I think the Jets are going to be fired up. Especially coming off a tough loss to the St. Louis Blues. So it should be, there's a lot, certainly no lack of skill in this game, Drew.
And no excuses. None. The Rangers playing tonight. Mm-hmm. You've been off since Tuesday.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
no excuses.
Back-to-back operation. There you go. The Jets and the Rangers tomorrow night at MTS Center. That's it for this abbreviated Thursday edition of NHL This Week. A big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Riverview Health Center Foundation, Cycle on Life, and Keener Jerseys. You can follow us on Twitter at Legal Curve, Facebook.com/Legal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose, Dave Minuk, down at the Moose game this evening. So check out IllegalCurve.com for all your Moose and your Jets information. For producer Alex, for Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. And until Saturday afternoon at 2 p.m. and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, we wish you good night and good luck. And thanks for listening to NHL This Week. Stay tuned for Thursday Night Football on TSN 1290.